Welcome back. And today I'm talking with Frank about first generation leadership. Now, first generation leaders are defined as the first people in their family who become a leader and or have a leadership role, a more formal leadership role outside of the family. And first generation leaders often face a whole series of kind of unique challenges due to their background and upbringing, such as kind of navigating unfamiliar academic and professional environments without the same support structures at home and just in terms of their kind of mental mapping. And they don't tend to have the same kind of guidance as their peers. Now, Frank is a consultant and a member of the Oxford Review. He's also a leadership coach, facilitator, and speaker. And his mission is to develop and support leaders. Particularly leaders with vision and leaders who are authentic in their interest in people and their challenges, and leaders with the courage to do what needs to be done to kind of deal with these challenges. More recently, I think it's safe to say, Frank, you've kind of got interested and started to support first generation leaders and kind of helping them to kind of amplify their impact to support them in what they're doing. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you for having me and greetings, everyone.
Yeah, it's great. Frank at the moment is it, every time I talk to Frank, he's in a different country. So quite often he's in Zimbabwe. But today, I think you're in Johannesburg. That's right, South Africa.
Yes, I'm in Johannesburg in South Africa.
Yeah, you're just about to fly off to Denver for a meeting. Right. So before we start, can you just tell us the story about how and why you kind of got interested in first generation leadership?
I had to work this out at some point. I'd been working with a client. In fact, there was a time I started getting clients who would tell me something like, "Frank, I'm in my dream job, a job that I dreamt to be in when I started my career, but it's not what I expected to be. There's just something missing out of it." And one day I had such a client, and he said to me in his defense that, "Frank, do you know that I'm the first person in my family ever to be an executive?" And so I probably just reacted, and I don't remember much more about that conversation. But it was, I think, just in mid-August or September of 2022, as we were coming out of the pandemic. Obviously, due to the experiences we all went through COVID, I think a couple of people had realized that life is too short and they wanted to make a change. And it was one of the two clients that approached me at the time that said, "Frank, do you know that I'm the first person in my family ever to be an executive?" And I'm like, "Hang on a moment, I've had this before." So it's at that time that I just started doing some basic, Googling to say, okay, first people in their family to be this, to be something. And that's when it came, the word first generation started coming into play. But at that time, I'd remembered that I had David and the Oxford Review. So I remember approaching you, David, and you almost quickly oriented me into the concept of first generation leaders. And I asked you if you could get me some research on the topic. And that's when you came back to me and you said, "Surprisingly, there's so much research on first generation students, but very little around first generation leaders, even though some of the nuances are kind of the same." And so you asked me if I'd be keen to research this topic, which I was reluctant to because I've never really considered myself a researcher. But at that time, I then went back and spoke to a few clients of mine who eventually identified themselves as first generation leaders once I explained what it was. And at that point, I actually realized that I had a lot of clients who had been first generation leaders. And I think part of it, especially here in Africa, as many of our countries are under 50 years of independence. And so, because of colonization, we had a minority of the minority pretty much having all the leadership roles. And so, what now is happening is years later, today, whether you speak to an Indian, a black, or a white person here in Africa, there's a chance that one in two or three people you speak to are probably the first person in their family ever to be a first generation leader. And that's when I thought there's probably something into this and a market, and I started taking interest in it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area. And when Frank approached me, I got really interested in it. We'll go through some of the there isn't an awful lot of research around first generation leaders, but what there is, we'll have a look at what some of the findings are a little bit later in the podcast. So earlier on, I kind of gave a really basic definition of first generation leadership and what a first generation leader is, but there are much more nuanced issues around this. So for you, what defines a first generation leader, and how do they tend to differ from leaders who come from families who've got leaders in their history, I suppose?
I think for me, family is the core element. First generation leaders come from families where no one has held a certain level of leadership position. Now, what I found tends to differ is how broadly or narrowly family is defined. And I think that's one of the key nuances. Does it include distant relatives or only your parents and siblings? And I find that the latter, that's the parents and siblings, tends to be the more generally accepted qualifier for someone being a first generation leader. But I can imagine that in communities like in Africa and Asia, where we are more close-knit in terms of family and more connected to our extended family, that there's there might be an unfair advantage to someone who has an extended family, because that person would probably be accessible to us. To ask for advice. But I would say that that would be the first qualifier family. And usually the first person in your immediate family tends to be what I seem to be taking as the qualifier for the first generation leader. And so coming from a family that has had no leadership experience, many of them lack that family network or guidance that you spoke about earlier. That established leadership, people who come from established leadership backgrounds may have. And so they may have had to navigate the path to leadership with fewer resources and support. And so what we find is that leaders from families with a history of leadership have got a more natural understanding of leadership because they've probably grown up observing their parents, do what they have to do. Whilst people from first generation settings tend to have maybe sometimes what may be an exotic leadership style, as I've observed, because they tend to emulate, some of their role models who are distant. Sometimes, I mean, it's not uncommon that people here in Africa are maybe inspired by a Barack Obama. And but Barack Obama is in America, and so maybe some of his leadership styles, which are influenced by his community, are not quite what you would find locally. So they bring a bit of an exotic feel because they emulate those role models by observing them. So I think those are some of the nuances that I've picked up from when dealing with this topic.
Yes. What's also interesting, so because I approached a few of the colleagues at the university about this, and because I got interested in it, and I got a couple of questions about, well, surely there's leadership in the family. But as I start to dig into it, what I discovered was usually, even though, like if you're a parent, for example, quite often they're kind of just managing the day to day, they don't actually consider themselves as being a leader in the way that you would perceive a leader within an organization. So, and just the very fact that you're getting people saying to you, do you know, Frank, I'm the very first person within my family to have an executive role or a leadership role, shows that it's having an impact, and it's having an impact in their heads about how they're thinking about themselves as a leader. And
Yes.
it's that that becomes quite important.
I actually have a very interesting example of a client that I'd been dealing with. And actually, his wife called me and said, do you know that your friend, as she called it, your friend is always wearing suits on Sundays and prioritizes a lot more work than us here at home? And after a while, what I actually did is I paired them up with, or I connected them with another client of mine who had been more experienced in the industry. And he was actually super surprised to figure out that, oh, you can actually dress down and so forth. So I know sometimes it might feel like there's a limited advantage, and sometimes how we show up at home is not the same as at work, but there are some nuances or some slight things that we observed as children that can eventually bring the advantage once we get into these kinds of roles.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And so first generation leaders, by the sounds of it, are making a whole load of assumptions about what the other leaders are doing, even though it's not true, you know, like having
Yes.
days off and things like that. And it's you know, obviously the role models, but also understanding what leadership engages in. And I found quite an interesting study suggesting anyway that there's a possibility that it was quite a limited data set, but it appears that first generation leaders are much more likely to suffer from imposter syndrome than people who are observing leadership, or you know, people within their family have had leadership roles, and
Yes.
so that's having an impact as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so I just wonder about what kind of challenges do first generation leaders face in their journey into leadership positions?
Well, there are quite a number of challenges, and I think one of them we've been speaking about, the absence of immediate access to role models and mentorship. Just this afternoon, I was facilitating a session, and I've discovered that a lot of professionals in the work environment tend not to have a support system at work. And so what ends up happening is your partner ends up bearing the brunt of all the frustration you had at work. And I was trying to encourage them to say, you know, you need to get a support system at work. At least sometimes that can be at least one filter, so that by the time you get home, yeah, you still vent about things, but it's not so much on your partner who frankly did not sign up to hear all of this. And what I find is when you're a first generation leader, when you come and vent, there's probably less feedback that your family may feel helpless in giving you that support and feedback, which people who come from families that are established can actually get some useful feedback once in a while to resolve that. And so that's one of the unique challenges that I think first generation leaders go through, the absence of immediate access to role models or mentors, even though in other families there may not even be a formal mentorship program of some sort that's actually happening. So that's something that I've realized. And along the journey, what I've also found is there's a certain weight that first generation leaders carry, just by the fact that they probably feel that they've gotten an opportunity that no one else in their family or their community has got. Sometimes they feel a bit of guilt of trying to leave people behind. And so in the process of people pleasing, they're afraid to reject their past and their community. And sometimes it holds them back psychologically in actually executing some of the things that are necessary. So that's also something that I've noticed. And maybe one more that I would put is, you know, leadership culture varies greatly across industries and organizations. But I think when first generation enter an environment, there are more unwritten rules and unspoken expectations and established norms that they are unfamiliar with. And I think that then makes it very difficult. So whilst a normal leader can also suffer from, you know, struggling to navigate office politics or build trust with colleagues, again, these are certain things that someone who comes from a family that has a bit of some leadership background can maybe get someone or get a reference to actually help in such instances. So, I mean, there are many we could go on in terms of challenges, but those are some of the challenges that have really come up, you know, in some of my interactions.
That's really interesting. Actually, I hadn't thought about that Because what that right at the start of this, you were talking about when they're in the workplace, they kind of they don't reach out for help. So there's a suggestion there from a psychological point of view that they feel like they're on their own. And it's like they're on their own in their family as a leader because there's nobody else there they can talk to or give any kind of experience. And that then extends into work. So there's this
Yes.
sense of I'm on my own and that they don't reach out. And the other thing that I hadn't thought about is that the family themselves feel that they can't support them because they don't know anything about it. And it kind of, so my daughter became a manager at Amazon a while ago. And we were always talking about like leadership management problems that she was having. Because I've been in a number of leadership management roles, and we were able to have that conversation. And I suppose if there is no experience in that, and you go home, who are you going to talk to? Like, and who's going to empathize and really get it and understand it from an experiential point of view?
Yeah.
Really interesting. The other interesting things that I found in what you were just saying is that whole idea about a sense of guilt. Leaving the family behind, leaving family members behind because you're moving out of kind of I suppose, the social circle that you're used to being in that isn't at leadership management kind of grades and kind of moving out of the family system as well. And then lastly, that whole thing that you were saying about not being able to really read the signs, the political signs, and what's going on in the organization. Because until you're in those positions, once you're into a leadership position, quite often in many, many organizations, you're actually into a political scenario that you've got to be able to navigate, read well, and operate well within that process. And if you're not used to that, I would think you'd come a cropper quite quickly, particularly
Yes.
with some of the Machiavellian people that you tend to meet at those kind of high levels.
Absolutely.
Really interesting. So, Frank, how can first generation leaders kind of navigate the lack of mentorship and guidance that may be more readily available to those with a family history of leadership?
Okay, as counterproductive as it sounds, given that first generation leaders need a lot of support, I'm actually a very big fan of trying to naturalize. We spoke about the other advantage that other leaders have. If you can find a natural way of getting that support, that helps. And I think in a lot of corporations, mostly when leaders are rising, there are people identified as high potentials. Make friends with some of your peers who come from families that have leaders. I know for one that if you befriend me and you ever came home with me, my dad will probably share quite a number of his experiences just in natural conversation. And I think that could be a very good starting point for a lot of first generation leaders to build relationship with peers and maybe just immerse themselves in that network. And I think you naturally learn rather than trying to rely a lot on formal learning. Which sometimes may not be as efficient, but going into something more formal but still semi-formal, I'm a big fan also of professional networks. Going to professional networks, I think sometimes that lack of knowledge of what kinds of conversation happens, what's the etiquette, those are some of the things that professional networks actually demystify. And at some point, you may even start to realize that, oh, how come I've got better ideas? Or this is how this company runs this and that company runs this. And so just having that diverse exposure that you get through professional networks is a semi-formal way of actually getting involved and getting used to some of this. And then maybe a more formal way, some companies have got employee resource groups or mentorship programs that are there for maybe people come from underrepresented backgrounds. Maybe that's an opportunity for you to join that because in as much as in the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging sector, There are quite a lot of similar challenges, and sometimes learning that you may be a first generation leader, but there's also so much diversity outside of being first generation leaders. And so you realize that you're actually not unique in your uniqueness. And I think that in itself can make a very big difference. And that's, of course, in addition to the emulating successful leaders. And the closer to home and the closer to industry, the better. Although also emulating, exotic, bringing in that exotic leadership style brings room for innovation. And so, yeah, that's something definitely that I would recommend a first generation leader to go with.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and it kind of leads on to my next question, actually, about what kinds of strategies can first generation leaders employ, because one of the for building strong networks and support systems, and you've mentioned a few things already within the kind of what they can do to kind of get over the lack of kind of mentorship and guidance, and I just wondered if there are some other strategies, particularly around network building and support system building.
Yes, alumni networks. For me, one of my most useful network is my high school alumni network. In there are a huge diversity of, I'm sorry, a huge group of professionals doing many different things. And a lot of them may not even consider themselves mentors or this, but again, it's a large group of people that you can immerse yourself in. And for me, my high school network, my high school alumni network is even bigger than my university network. So I think looking into alumni networks can definitely help. And as I spoke about, I did speak about employee resource groups, but there can also be communities out there that I know there are a few, and there could be more on first generation leaders. That's something that could come up. But knowing myself as Frank, what would I do? I would create that network if it didn't exist, and pretty much invite people, even if it's just a weekly, a monthly, 1 hour call we have on Zoom. And we just start talking about some of the things that we are dealing with. I think through our collective intelligence as people affected by the same thing, we could actually share the burden and maybe demystify or bust some of the myths that we have about what are the disadvantages we have in society.
That's a great idea, actually, is setting up your own support network. So if there isn't one, go out, reach out to other first generation leaders. Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, really interesting. I mentioned earlier on this whole the piece of research that found that first generation leaders are more likely to kind of get imposter syndrome and have more feelings of self-doubt. And I just wondered what your thoughts were about helping first generation leaders overcome these.
I think for me, as a general rule of thumb, when someone comes to me and asks for feedback, I always say a lot of people are expecting things to improve on. And one of the things that I've learned, having dealt with feedback a lot, as you know, my mainstream business is helping leaders deal with difficult conversations, and one of them is feedback. I always say that before you ask for any area to improve, what qualifies you to ask for an area and to improve is when you know what your strengths are. What are you good at? Because that is what gives you the confidence to actually, you have something to hold on to that propels you forward. And so the first thing that I always say to people, know your strengths. Before you ask, what can I improve? Know your strengths, because that's what you're going to run with. And that's why there's a book I think I once saw that says, why C students trump A students. And the general notion of that book is C students pretty much know that there's this one area that I'm really good at, and they run with it. And so they become more focused. Whereas with A students, you can give them a variety of things, and sometimes they're not always very clear about, what their biggest strength is and their focus. So focusing on your strengths and accomplishments and running with those, I think will give you a certain amount of confidence that makes you, ease into things and be more comfortable. But then the other thing that one can do is, identify your triggers. Pay attention to when those feelings of self-doubt are coming up. Is it when we are running a meeting? Is it when you're presenting something? What is it that you can do? And there are two parts to this. The first thing is you can temporarily come up with a coping mechanism to help you do that. But then for me, that's a temporary solution. The next step is if you are struggling with a meeting, someone like me would go out and find out how our meetings run. And that's something I'm also involved in an organization called Toastmasters. And I just from Toastmasters, I learned how to run meetings that start and end on time, which was something that was not popular in my area. And I think because in some parts of Africa, meetings don't start and end on time, that is something that gave me confidence. Later on, I became more involved and I learned Robert's Rules of Order. And that helped me run more structured meetings.
Yeah.
And I'm actually a board chairman of another entrepreneurs hub simply because I'm the only one in that group of people that knows how to run meetings and nothing really to do with my professional expertise. So identifying your triggers, and once you know what specific triggers you're dealing with, you actually seek out solutions and know what. How to build confidence that in itself can make a difference. Then the last thing that I'll share, I mean, there are many ideas, is seeking professional help. I have found that across board generally, there's a reluctance to seek professional help. I think many of us think that we can fix things. And it's funny also because something that I've learned as a professional coach is that my ability to help others is not equal to my ability to help myself. So if your life is a mess, David, there's a chance that I can help you straighten a few things, but there's no chance I can help myself. I try and it's difficult. So make it a habit to reach out to counselors if that's what you need, to reach out to mentors, to reach out to paid coaches, to actually to help you with some of these struggles. And I think they can, shorten your struggles in these particular areas. And I think those are some of the ways a first generation leader can access, help to help them overcome that imposter phenomena that they're dealing with.
I think that's excellent. Yeah, and certainly, yeah, because like kind of thinking outside of kind of the range of people that into professional coaches and consultants and people like that can really help because they've got a lot of experience in those kinds of areas. Nice. And what role do you think resilience plays in the success for first generation leaders?
When I think of a lot of first generation leaders I work with, they exhibit high levels of resilience and determination because they've had to overcome significant challenges and barriers when it comes to leadership positions. And I think it's important for me to define, resilience in the way I see it. It's simply your ability to bounce back from setbacks. And so, because you've already overcome so many challenges, you become proudly shameless because a lot of people from established environments tend to feel a lot of shame whenever they don't do something right and they feel they need to do something right. Whereas maybe that's the one monkey that's off the back of a first generation leader because they've had to fall many times and they've become experts at overcoming barriers and challenges. So that's something that I think works in the favor of first generation leaders. Also, what I find is resilient leaders tend to be adaptable to thriving in changing environments. In one way, I've grown up in an environment where prices would double sometimes every day in a hyperinflationary Zimbabwe. And so firstly, we've moved from that whole complaining mode to just having to keep up because each time you waste time complaining, you're losing time to fix the problem. And then by the time you figure out the solution, there's already another problem. So you become more adaptable. And I think this is where resilience comes into play. It helps you become more adaptable. But even more so, in the same line of what I was saying, I think emotionally we become stronger as people coming from this adversity, because very few things can make you cry. I realize now that when you go, in fact, in many parts of Africa, there are people who live in abject poverty, but they seem happier than people who live in better circumstances. And that's because, and maybe it comes down to Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs to say maybe sometimes when you've very little, you've got some, there's few things you have to protect. And so you start valuing more the things that are more important to you. But I think you become emotionally stronger. And I think that's the role that resilience helps in overcoming challenges, in becoming more adaptable, and becoming more emotionally stronger.
Yeah, certainly coming from a way back down the field kind of helps with that. And it kind of links to the thing that you were talking about before, how C students often do better than A students, particularly when they get out into the work. There was some interesting research a few years ago looking at, so I supervise PhD students, and there was an interesting piece of work looking at which students tend to do best with PhDs, and they're not people who've got a first class honours. They tend to be people who've got a 2.2 or a 2.1. They tend to do better at PhD. So because there's a lot of challenges, not least the length of time and the amount of work that you've got to do. And people who found the first degree quite easy and tend to be successful tend to get a bit of a shock once they get to the PhD. Yeah, really
Yes.
interesting. Yeah. Oh, and what about how first generation leaders can leverage their kind of unique experiences as a first generation leader and use the perspective that they've gained to bring kind of fresh ideas and innovation to their leadership roles? What are your thoughts about that?
I love this question because I suppose it's one opportunity to turn a first generation. And maybe I've come. I'm sounding like being a first generation leader can make you a form of victim, but I think this is where you have an advantage because that unfamiliarity with the established norms can give you a leadership advantage because you do not know what the rules are, so you create them. And we know that this world rewards a lot of people who create the rules and move the status quo forward or challenge the status quo, which is the crux of innovation. So I think that's very important because people who come from established leadership backgrounds have their families sometimes meddling and trying to influence how things should be done. And whereas you actually have that advantage of just going and being practical and not being holding back to some past that probably doesn't exist. So I think that's definitely one thing that first generation leaders can use. But also, remember we spoke about first generation leaders having to come from difficult situations. They learn to be more resourceful and adaptable. And I think that can be an asset in overcoming a lot of obstacles. And so that in itself is something that I also think can work in the favor of first generation leaders. You're an expert at overcoming obstacles, and you get most of us in business are paid to do that. So I think that's a big advantage. But also, given that you come from disadvantage, there's always this strong work ethic and drive that comes with someone who's come from difficult backgrounds. And so that determination to succeed makes you relentless in your pursuit. And that could be a powerful force that we could leverage to make things for to move things forward. So I think there's so many advantages that we can celebrate for first generation leaders that help them become innovative. And I think when I think of innovation, I'm thinking of taking something that works in a particular industry and bringing it in to another industry and trying to adapt it to that sector. And I think unlike people who come from established family backgrounds, and we know that a lot of businesses are family run, there could be a closeness to the way things run. But I'm always inspired by a story that I read about the whole concept of if you go to a hospital today and you're able to visit the client and sorry, visit the patient, but also do your work in between visits and there's a cafe. I was reminded that hospitals were not always like that, but someone visited a hospital once and apparently got some of the best healthcare. But the challenge is, 2 hours in, the family did not know whether this patient was fine or not because no one had communicated with them. And so someone then thought, you know, I'm in the hospitality sector. And besides, I'm actually paying for this patient. I'm the main customer, not the patient. This would not fly in the hospitality industry. And so apparently, that's when someone says, what if we bring what happens in the hospitality sector in the hospitals industry? And they came up with some kind of form of hospitality. And that's when they started thinking, you know, we need to treat our primary client as the people that brought the patient. So now I've been in a hospital where I drove my car into an emergency. It was put in a lift. They took the patient straight out of the car and they told me to park. Everything will be fine. When I got there, they gave me an assessment that no, the patient has been admitted. The doctor is working on them. And now I don't even need to worry about rushing through visits because there's Wi-Fi, there's cafeterias. And that's what we as first generation leaders can learn from other people, exotic sectors, and bring that advantage into industries that were not established.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I like that. I like that whole story about hospitality. I think it's brilliant. Yes, and I have noticed that actually. I had noticed that over the last kind of 10, 15 years, well, more probably 20 years, hospitals now have all of these facilities around them. They're more of a community actually, and there's better communications going on. Interesting. And what do you find are the common kind of kinds of misconceptions that people have about first generation leaders?
I think the first misconception is that first generation leaders lack experience. And this is something that I sometimes feel that even first generation leaders think themselves, which is not true. They may lack the traditional leadership experience, but they bring valuable experience from their unique backgrounds. And that's why we see them innovating in the places that they're involved in, at least with the clients that I've been involved in. So I think that's one misconception that I'd like to get rid of. And then also, that first generation leaders lack confidence. The truth is, self-doubt is a common challenge that extends beyond first generation leaders. Yes, the lack of role models does affect their ability to show up confidently, but that strong determination to succeed is a confidence that a lot of first generation leaders actually carry. And I think that's actually something that I would say makes a big difference. Another one is maybe a risk averse, and because I was debating this with someone whether first generation leaders are more risk averse. But I think sometimes, whilst yes, sometimes they approach certain things with caution because they don't know how things are done. I sometimes see that as an asset, because there are a lot of unconscious things that we do as first generation leaders that we didn't know that are not acceptable, that bring a lot of advantage to business. And so sometimes I actually think that maybe people from traditional leadership backgrounds tend to be more risk averse than first generation leaders. And so that's another misconception that I'd want to bust.
Yeah, interesting, really interesting. And what advice would you give to aspiring leaders who have no kind of leadership within their family, kind of aspiring first generation leaders who are just starting out on their leadership journey?
I think, and this is in organizations. Okay, so maybe one of the things that I would say is, maybe get involved in, I'm a big fan of, I told you, professional networks, but within the company, right? They are employee resource groups. What I love is the informality of some of them, and maybe you can create or expand an employee resource group on first generation leaders that actually provide the safe space for people needing peer support. I know now, for example, we've got a lot of first generation leaders who hire professionals to go to their rural areas to help people in their community, to uplift their community, to make things work. But I actually think in the company, we could have a lot of first generation leaders come in and chip in the development process. And I think that's something that can make a difference. And also, I think there's an opportunity to experiment. I know some companies have shadow boards or shadow executives that can be implemented. And I think that's an opportunity to harness the diversity of skill that exists between people from established backgrounds and non-established backgrounds. And I think that confidence can make a very big difference. But the biggest of them all, inclusive communication. I always say, there are words like people say, we must be professional, you must lead, we must be strategic. And a lot of times I see people use these words that maybe we all understand, but sometimes we don't always know or have the same appreciation of the same meaning. Simple inclusive communication to say, let's think long term, let's think 20 years on, in place of being strategic. Or if you're saying let's lead, specify what you mean by that. Do you mean we should coach and mentor more? Do you mean that we need to get to know our teams more? That actually breaks down the barriers for the average first generation leader so that they can belong. So I think inclusive communication can actually dissolve a lot of the challenge, in fact, remove the challenges, reduce the challenges that need to be solved. So that's probably what I would say.
Brilliant. Great. And what about the first generation leaders themselves? What advice would you give them, who are
Oh,
just
okay.
starting out on their leadership journey?
I don't like to give advice when I don't know someone, but if there had to be one, is why fit in when we were born to stand out? Don't try and fit into the mold of what you think you should be, because what you are is probably why we need you in that role anyway. So that's probably, I'll limit it to that.
And what about some, have you got any notable examples of successful first generation leaders and what we can and learn from their experiences?
Well, Oprah is someone that comes. I grew up watching Oprah, and Oprah was raised in, rural Arkansas, if I'm not mistaken. And she went on and succeeded. And I suppose she got a lot of support. In fact, I remember Oprah sharing a story. We were talking about exotic communication. She talks about having admired a lady called Barbara Walters, who was a news anchor. And she found herself on TV. Her accent just was not herself. And she tried to imitate Barbara Walters. And one day she even made a mistake. Instead of calling Canada, Canada, she called it Canada, because she was just trying to emulate someone. And it was just a lot of hard work. And I think we can learn a lot from people like Oprah. I also know that there are people like politicians, especially in the US and the UK, there are politicians like Colin Powell or Barack Obama. They were probably the first people in their family to even be involved in those spaces. But maybe a non-American example, I heard that Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, or she's the former, came from a family that was not at all involved in government. In fact, I think the father was a policeman and the mother was an assistant somewhere. And I think her leadership was non-traditional, as we could see, and very progressive. And I think we can all be inspired by people like that.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to something you were saying before about first generation leaders not being frightened to be themselves. And, there's a lot of strengths in that.
Yes.
What about first generation leaders inspiring and mentoring the next generation of leaders, kind of particularly those from underrepresented backgrounds? What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's important to share your story. To share your story and listen. Whilst I do not know, in fact, Trevor, I know Trevor Noah from South Africa. His dad was Swiss, but definitely his mother was, I think, a house help. So I do not really know if he was first generation, but he said when he got this gig to host the Daily Show, and all these other big gigs that he started hosting in the US, it was a big struggle for him, even though we all saw the glamorous side of things. But he said each time he started meeting some of the big stars and he noticed hosting, say, the Oscars or something, that some of those people were shaking backstage. He said that made him feel better. And I think one of the most understated things is, share your mistakes and your vulnerabilities, because sometimes we think that everything happens automatically and there are no mistakes. And I think when you share your mistakes, I'm able to appreciate more that, okay, I'm human. This is normal. Even my idol went through this. And I think sharing your stories is definitely something that I would encourage them to do. But also more consciously, whilst it's good to uplift your community and remember that weight that we spoke about earlier, let's also be conscious that your community starts to expand beyond the family and the place where you came from. That company you came from, or that position you came from, coming from university, going into corporate, there are a lot of people that could use your intelligence. And maybe sometimes even doing a happy hour. One of my clients does a happy hour where he just meets different people in the company at the time. That makes a difference. And sometimes from that happy hour, there's one or two conversations that come off it. That's a way that you give back to people like that. And I think one of the most underrated things also is getting yourself a corporate, a sponsor, someone that speaks on your behalf. I think that can have an immense difference when someone has confidence in you and recommends you into something. That in itself can make a big difference in lifting others with you.
Great answers. And what about how can first generation leaders help to navigate the cultural and social differences that they tend to encounter in leadership roles?
Well, this one for me comes to me as a more general challenge that many leaders have. Right now I say to leaders, do you understand generational theory, right? Because it's a simple model that explains why Generation Z or millennials behave the way they do, why baby boomers think the way they do. So I think that that's definitely one of the ways that one can navigate the cultural and social differences. I also think that support networks can make a difference, especially in the company. And they don't necessarily have to be about first generation leaders. It could be about anything. Go and listen to what people's challenges are and how they perceive challenges. And that can give you a big picture into how people perceive things or how a certain language affects people. I think that in touchness of being, on the understanding what people are thinking on the ground, how they communicate, allows you to communicate at their level. So that in itself can make a difference. But also going to platforms that allow you to navigate different cultural differences. I know, for example, at times when I have to speak, I remember once I was coaching one of my clients at the semifinals of the World Championships of Public Speaking. And in his speech, one of the things that he had in there was porridge. Do you know what porridge is?
Porridge, yes,
Yes. But the Americans
breakfast.
know oatmeal, right?
Oh, yes.
Because that's what they have. And so just being part of a community where we could go and practice that speech and realize that something that we normally take for granted is totally unknown in another part of the world, that makes a difference. So I don't even do complicated things. Just go and speak to people. Find out if they understand your language. And if not, speak their language. Because as Nelson Mandela, you speak to a man in a language they understand, it gets to their head. But if you speak to a man in their own language, you speak to their heart. And I think that's what we want to do as leaders, speak to capture the hearts and minds of those we lead.
I think that's very germane and wise advice, actually. Yes, speaking to people in their own language. Yes, definitely. So from an organizational point of view, or what do you think the long-term benefits are of having more first-generation leaders in positions of power and influence?
As I said, when you're a first generation leader, you come in almost as a bit of an outsider. And sometimes I feel that like first generation leaders are better placed to deal with nuances of diversity, inclusivity, and social mobility. And I think they can play a big part in addressing systemic biases that exist in the organization, increasing representation, having more people participate that represent the demographic of the people that you're actually working with. And sometimes when you include more people in the decision making that represent, that they can actually start representing even markets or people that you had previously not catered for. And that can only have long-term benefits on the bottom line of the business.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. And are there any tips that you can offer first generation leaders so they can kind of advocate for greater diversity, equity, and inclusion in their organizations and communities?
I just think that their personal story of maybe challenges or biases that they had, and how sometimes we do certain things thinking that it's normal, and we later realize that the change we've brought forward is something that other people had been trying for so long. And I think we have many examples of how when something new was tried, things made a difference. And sometimes we have to wait until there's a problem or a disruption to actually start changing. I think that our greater, the uniqueness that we have as first generation leaders is already something that can tell a story about something. I mean, it's one thing trying to influence people through rhetoric and speech, but just being a demonstration and having case studies through your leadership is probably a greater aspect of advocating for that. But like I also said earlier, first generation leaders are not, or if you're a first generation leader, you're not the only diversity or the only person that needs to be included in the company. So I think understand that the challenges that you went through, there's someone else going through the same challenges, yes, but there's also someone else going through a different challenge. And so just make an effort as someone with a conscience to say, okay, now that I know my challenge well and I'm helping others, what other challenges exist out there? And I think when you start asking yourself those questions, you're able to open up to learning more and more diversities every day and more opportunities to bring equity to the table and more opportunities to bring inclusion in an environment or organization.
I think that's really important, actually. I do wonder whether people kind of get stuck in their own diversity, notice that more, and kind of ignore other people's challenges and issues that other people are dealing with. I think that's really nice advice.
Yeah. Can I just say something extra that I thought of when I think of South Africa? South Africa has unique leaders, eh? And something that I can learn from some South African leaders is just be a proud minority. Embracing your identity and heritage makes a difference. I know people that now wear Mandela shirts to work, and it's become, totally acceptable. And I know in West Africa, they tend to have unique African wear, just like in the Arab community. But for some of us in Southern Africa, particularly, we still had a great Western sense of doing things. And I think these diverse leaders coming through, just by being a proud minority, helping us reclaim our heritage and just be proud of who we are at the core. And I think that's something that we can also all be proud of.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Very important. Okay, so last question. I think I've pummeled you enough with questions here, Frank. So what are the most important lessons that you've learned from your work with first generation leaders?
I think the power of role modeling. And one of the reasons why I say this is when you're a first generation leader, you're trying to find where you belong or someone you can follow. And I think the more nuanced your journey is, the easier it becomes for me to know whether I should follow you or not, because sometimes it's a lucky dip and sometimes I'm still too inexperienced to know how we show up. So I think in whatever position that you hold, whether you're a first generation leader or not, it's important that you are conscious of what kind of example you are creating, and maybe create a template of yourself that makes it easy for others to follow and to follow you and make things important. I think that's one of the things that I would definitely say is an important lesson. And of course, given that you are coming from maybe a minority group, continuously learning not just about the ropes in corporate or not just how you show up, but also continuously learning about other diversities, other things that need to be done, is a very key element for you in your development as a leader. And sometimes you also then come up with ideas that you need to implement that maybe no one has ever implemented. And so you now need to continuously learn to come up to say, how do we solve these adaptive challenges that we've never ever thought about? So continuous learning becomes a very key part for any first generation leader that wants to succeed. And the last one, because I'm very big on this, and I've actually, I've started building a business around this, start building networks around this, build a support network that helps you with wellness, a support network that helps you with your mental, a support network that helps you relax, a support network that helps you with people that can help you with deals, create relationships left, right, and center with your clients, with your peers, sometimes with your direct reports across board that can help you with many different things. Because it's in those networks that I think once we have each other as people, we need nothing more. And I think that's one of the crucial things that anyone in the minority can ever do for themselves. Build those crucial networks that help solve problems when they come.
Brilliant. This has been really good, Frank. I've really enjoyed this. So,
Thank you.
lastly, how can people contact you if they want, particularly if they want some help as a first generation leader?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I must admit, I've not been particularly active, but my name is Frank Tsuro, Tsuro. On LinkedIn, or you can email me. My email is frank@franklyspeaking.co. frank@franklyspeaking.co.
Brilliant. I'll put the links into the show notes for that, and your profiles and things like that. This has been
Thank you.
brilliant. Thank you so much, Frank. I've really enjoyed this.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, David. I enjoyed the
Yeah,
conversation.
it's really good.